Welcome to this week's episode of Discerning Consciousness with Mike and Ant-Man.
Hi everyone.
This week we will be accompanied by our resident shaman, Heather Heaton.
Hi Mike, hi Ant, nice to be back again.
It's always nice to have you on the show. So this week we are going to be talking about the grisly subject of death and how we as a society interact with that. So last time we were talking about the journey that you go through on life. Well, this is a continuation of that in terms of our journey onto the other side. So to start off with, I think it's always important to understand how our culture deals with death. And because we are brought up in the Western culture, that's the one we're going to be talking about today.
Mm. So I think a good starting point for the discussion will be how we deal with death in our culture. And as we all know, and our listeners know, it's very much a taboo subject. It's very much from a young age, it's something that is hidden from young children. And even when we become adults, it's not something we want to face. There's not a framework for even discussing death, how we deal with it, how we deal with the issue. It's, as I said before, it's very much a taboo subject.
Yeah, so we don't even discuss it, we don't bring it up in topics.
No.
And in actual fact, everything around it is built with confusions.
Mm.
From the very fact, from day one, we are told we're our body.
Yeah.
Instead of thinking the body is just something that we use while we're here on Earth.
A vehicle.
Yes. Yeah. And like you say, in like every single Disney show, you're almost protected from the idea of death. Like, oh, don't worry, they're not dead, they're just sleeping.
Mm, mm. So, in essence, we are fooling ourselves by thinking that we can dodge our own mortality, if you like.
Definitely.
And one way in which we do that is just simply by not even discussing the issue of death or our mortality.
Yeah, well, it happens so infrequently in the family group, per se,
mm.
that we don't know how to even approach the subject.
Mm. That's a good
to
point.
To ourselves, not even alone to other people.
Mm.
I mean, it gets to the fact that we are so innately embedded with our sense of a reality from our own perspective that we can't even imagine the world without us being in it.
Mm. Mm.
So we almost believe we'll live forever.
Mm, it's very easy. I like what you're saying, because it is very easy for all of us to just trick ourselves, no matter what age we are, you know, be it 5, 50, or 100, that no, you know, I'm going to carry on living forever.
Yeah. Well, live forever or die trying. That's why I always say.
Mm, yeah. So be good to bring Heather in at this point, your perspective on, you know, death, how we deal with it in modern Western culture, the fact that we fear death so much, as we know, and yet at the same time we believe somehow that we're going to live forever. You can see, you know, with the growth of plastic surgery and this idea that somehow we can dodge death. What's your take on, you know, why it's feared so much and why we don't have a very evolved, yeah, I like that word, evolved attitude towards death, if you like?
I think because we've developed a concept, almost unspoken, that it's an end.
Mm.
I think that's a very good point, actually. Yeah.
Which is quite interesting. Being an end terrifies the individual, most individuals, it terrifies that you thinking, feeling, yeah, imagining, looking for comfort, looking for joy, looking to stay away from discomfort and unhappiness could suddenly end.
Mm.
It's an ongoing, it's like a dynamo ongoing and somebody suddenly pulls the plug. How is that possible? How can you see yourself as an individual as suddenly not existing anymore?
Which links to what you were saying before.
Yeah, exactly. We just don't even think it will happen. We can't conceive
because we can't quantify it. Yeah. It's almost like our brains, which are very good at rationalizing a lot of things, can't rationalize death. That's why we have this taboo attitude to it. And as you said, Heather, this idea of end, it's so dramatic. We can't see what's on the other side. So we can't, it's right, blinkers go up, becomes a taboo subject. We can't even get to grips with it because we can't conceive of that idea of something, like you say, just ending, like the dynamo switching off.
Yeah, well, the plug being pulled.
It's the unknown as far as we're concerned. And anything that we don't know about, we fear.
And we live in a culture now, especially with the growth of the internet, whereby we can know so many things.
Yeah. About at the information age, it's all at our fingertips, apart from the things that we actually need. So, you know, the fact that we actually fear death because we don't know enough about it suddenly means that we've got this problem where we almost fear life, that we're trying to preserve our life to the extent that we don't live it.
And this idea of preserving life, we can see in the whole process of mortician, whereby when the actual physical death of the body has happened, you know, it's almost it's decorated up to look like the corpse is actually still alive, which is a very bizarre process again. But I understand in one sense why that happens, because it's to provide comfort to the relatives. Some certain types of people will see that and think, oh, well, you know, our dad or mum or granddad or whoever, oh, no, they're looking like they used to. And I understand that on a very human level why we would do that. But again, it does speak of our inability to kind of be truthful about what death is about in terms of the whole cycle of life.
If I can say something there that I never...
I did see you smile a lot.
Yeah, it amuses me.
Our listeners couldn't see that.
relating to what you're saying, Ant, is that when the morticians have made the makeover on the corpse, that relatives are needing desperately for the finished look to be exactly like they remember the person. I have heard relatives saying many a time, oh, I had to get my comb out and brush and comb the hair because the mortician had combed it the wrong way, and that was not my mum, or that was not my dad. So I think, if anything, this making over of the corpse is to enable the family to be able to look at their loved ones for the last time and not be horrified with the unpleasant look that a corpse can have. So so I think that is lessening the shock,
the harshness, and the shock,
the sadness. Do we really want our family members to look at a deceased person that we know and love so well, or have loved so well, and see them looking pretty gruesome on that last one? We really don't want that. So it's nice to be able to say goodbye with a nice image, but very often the makeover doesn't fit the memory that the family.
It jars, doesn't it?
I've heard so many saying, "Oh, but that wasn't my relative. It didn't look like." But they're very. I think families are very allowing for.
Yeah. One thing I would add to that, though, is we go to the next level of preserving the bodies after death, to the idea of pumping them full of formaldehydes so the bodies don't decay for decades.
Yes. And I'm not sure if that's done on a regular basis. Would you know?
Well, I know that any deathly experiences that I've had to deal with, it's always been something that the actual funeral directors actually push very heavily.
They do push, yes.
Yeah. Right. Okay. That's. I wasn't up to speed with that. Maybe being done on a quite.
But it's normally.
It's considered normal these days.
It is normally done to preserve the body through the process to the funeral. So say a week to 2 weeks. Not normally for years. It won't.
But it will preserve it for years.
Oh, it can do that, can it?
But that's very interesting, because I'm sure the body would be okay for a week anyway. Although I'm no expert. I'm no expert on that.
Yeah, it will. It will last a while.
What I want to say is that, coming from a shamanic or a spiritual shaman's background, the death, of course, is not seen as the end. The body is seen as a vehicle to use for a period of time, and that there is the option further on down the death processes of the individual to have a return and be born into another body, reincarnation. I don't know that everybody has a belief in reincarnation. There seems to be more and more evidence gathering now around the world of reincarnation. But when one recognizes reincarnation, the death process takes on another view or another concept, another picture. The sadness of losing your loved one and grieving and emotional loss and dealing with the process of bereavement is one area of it. But then, of course, there can be a celebration of rebirth as well. So it can enable the process eventually to be a more celebratory one further on down the road for those that are left behind. And I think maybe we looked in ancient history and find where bones were preserved and they were kept around the family. I feel that this is probably a connection that in ancient times people did feel that there was a celebration of rebirth.
And of course that is very much at odds with the Western attitude where it's like, quick, get the body ferreted away, you know, whereas what you're talking about, Heather, is this idea of creating this link with the person that's deceased through their actual physical body, in a sense, with the bones and all the rest of it. And whereas what we do in, as I said before, in the West is it's, you know, the body's taken away very quickly and dealt with, you know.
Yes, because I think the ancients, they didn't have the convenience and the slickness of like, you know, let's do have a whole industry to deal with the whole thing so that it's very clinical and very, very cute. And it's a system that we've got into and it works.
And on one level, that's what's driving the whole process of what happens when a person dies is the business element.
I was going to say, these days, the extortionate cost is ridiculous. When someone's going through that grieving process and then they're trying to get as much money out of you as possible.
But all the industries concerned and all the aspects concerned. I think a lot of people would agree with you, Mike, if they've gone through the process. I remember somebody saying to me when I went through the process, now watch the jackals come out of the woodwork and come to you for money. So there is a lot of that concept to it. We have developed an industry, good or bad, whatever your view, anybody's view is, good or bad, it is a very big industry now. Of course, the ancients didn't have the industry.
There is one isolated case of the Egyptians. They had a whole industry behind that.
Well, that's hardly an isolated case.
Very, very well documented.
And for quite a few hundred years, too.
Yeah.
But they did have
industry. That's one for another episode.
They did have, because they did feel that they were sending, because of the body, the actual corpse, the actual physicality, had an impact on the afterlife. So they had to take care of the afterlife. So it's a very important point.
So what I wonder
if we've missed a part of that process. But does it work for people? I think it is important. Does this method, the method that our Western, our modern Western society have, does it work for people?
So what you're saying, Heather, is the fact that in ancient times, we're thinking of pharaohs and such like, obviously well-documented cases, they realised that the how you dress the body, the whole process of death, immediately after death, you know, how you prepare the body, actually was important to the afterlife. Is that what, you know, it actually would have an effect, or that's what they saw, that's why they spent so much time, you know, creating mummies and, you know, having, you know, jewels or precious items there.
But the more of that happened was the more upmarket they were. So nearer to royalty.
So some of that was sort of ego stuff, you know.
Or leaders. It was felt if somebody had reached that level of competence and wisdom, whatever you want to call it, ability, that therefore they should be preserved in the afterlife and be able to either look over us or come back
yeah, to us. That's the point I was making.
Because they had skills that were valuable. So, of course, like we've known many societies over history, with them they did feel that royalty, if the royal blood was pure, then it they had very holy and sacred abilities, perhaps beyond the general public, that needed to be preserved. And they understood that there was a gap period or space, whatever you call it, between the death or the decease of the body, the corporeal body, to when they found themselves in the nirvana space, the space beyond. But between, there was a journey that could be full of dangerous and difficult stumbling blocks and barriers, depending on what had been going on in their lifetime and what was within their own thinking and emotions and processing. So the whole purpose of that preservation and sending them through was to try to get them through the difficult space,
the transition
between life at this side and life at the other side, going across the waters, as it were, and the dangers that there were that could take you away.
That's why you make an interesting you say an interesting phrase about crossing the waters, because a lot of the Egyptian, the hieroglyphs, they're in boats, aren't they?
So. Absolutely, that you've hit the nail on the head. It, locally, to our Western world, the waters, the river is called the River Styx.
Right.
S-T-I, Y, I think it X.
Yeah.
And that's the crossover place for us in this part of the world.
Which allegedly from the Greeks. The river Styx.
Well, it might have come from that then, but we've definitely taken it on in this part of the world. Yeah, definitely.
And of course, what you're talking about, this idea of crossing the threshold or the river Styx, is very much at odds with some of the more fluffy spiritual interpretation of death and the afterlife, whereby your soul just flies on up back to the divine or back to the source. There's no idea of struggle after death in the more kind of fluffy interpretations of death and the afterlife. What you're describing is, no, after death there's still this struggle in this transition period.
Yes. I always feel that we're left with the theory of when somebody has died or when people have become spirits, then there's something really spooky and scary about them. So it's the sort of this ghost and nasty spirits haunting and wandering around that we have a legacy of in our culture. From old times.
That's partly, again, just relates back to...
And it scares us a lot.
Yeah, and I would say that's, again, partly due to what, you know, Mike was saying at the beginning, where we're so identified with the physical. Anything that is not the physical, i.e. in spirit, is like, ooh, that's scary.
Yes. And I think that is part of the fear, where we're actually quite happy to...
Push it away.
Tidy it all up neatly and to make it a less scary thing.
I was going to say, I remember seeing a ghostly apparition of my parents one day. There's me thinking, well, if they're ghosts, they're dead. Suddenly I panicked, like, oh my God, my parents can't be dead. So I shouted out Mum, Dad, and they suddenly ran out of their room. And I was like, oh, okay, they're alive, that's cool.
And what makes you think that that was apparition? Do you think it was spiritual vibration of some sort? Or do you think it was emotional imagination? What do you think?
I actually believe it was them dreaming, because they were at bed at the time. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning. I went for the toilet, and I reckon they were dreaming, walking upstairs arm in arm.
That would be astral
travel.
Astral projection.
Yeah.
They were astral. Yes, I have a relative, a male relative, and I'm sure he wouldn't mind me saying, I think he's actually quite happy to tell people, that twice I've known him over the years to have seen his wife get up out of bed through the middle of the night, you know, apparently needing to go to the bathroom. And as she rises from the bed, he just suddenly noticed, in fact, she's still laying down. And he's asked me about it twice, and I said, yes, I think that's her astral travelling, she's walking. So I want to put to you, if that's a possibility, if you're convinced that's a possibility, then surely being spirits when the body has gone is a possibility.
Oh, definitely. That's what made me believe in all this spiritualness.
Mm.
Because the way my mind worked at the time was, well, okay, and if they're spirits when they're dead, but that means there must be also spirits when they're alive,
mm.
and they're just inhabiting the body.
Mm.
And that was the only logical conclusion I could come to at the time.
Mm. I'm going to bring in something that might seem a little bit fluffy, excuse me about this, but I think Joanne Rowling in the Harry Potter films brought death and people being in another vibration that you can see or connect with.
Mm.
I think her versions were pretty good. I believe that she had a lot of criticism by bringing into children's films and children's stories quite surprising and shocking deaths. They felt that, my understanding is that they felt that that was inappropriate for children's stories. And this is bringing again. Us right back to the beginning. Absolutely. Again.
How hiding protecting.
Children, protecting, yeah, yeah. Keeping children away.
Yeah.
I want to say publicly, I honour her for doing that and doing it in the most real way. I would say real. I'm not saying realistic. I'm talking real way,
mm.
because it did show that these people were still in another existence, but and also they were there to be supportive, and it did say that they were projections of the heart of the people who were still in body and alive.
Mm.
They were in the hearts, and that's where the projections came from, and I thought that that was a wonderful understanding to give to children.
Yeah, I mean, also talking about the other side so much, mm. it seems to be that religions, at least in the old days, had the iron fist on controlling the other side and who went there,
mm.
to the good place or who went to the mm. bad place.
Yeah, they would create all the imagery and, you know, create the reality in the minds of the common people of what it meant to die and what was on the other side. And in a lot of cases, you know, the downtrodden, the peasants, the underclass, the only thing that kept them toiling away was this idea that, you know, the religious leaders were telling them that, okay, you might be working 15 hours a day, you know, dying at 32 of some wretched disease, but when you die, you're going to this amazing place, you know. So carry on toiling away in the field and, you know, you'll be fine.
Yeah, it is. I'm not sure how many religions really have projected that image.
I'm thinking very much of a sort of more Christian.
I was going to say Christians definitely promoted that image.
Yeah, yeah.
I think a lot of the mainstream religions have promoted not striving to have the best of the materialistic easy life.
Mm.
And then we know from what we understand of the Christian religions, it is almost as if that went a stage further and said those with deprivation throughout their lives will receive something wonderful. And I'm not sure that they got it 100% wrong. I think it's a twist on looking at your life when you have to struggle in a materialistic way, to be able to look at it in a progressive way so that maybe you can find what choices and options you have in life, what somebody has choices and options. Rather than say no, just love what you haven't got and put up with it. That's always been my concern about the Christian religion. How do you boys feel about that?
Mm, yeah, I think that what I was talking about before is the peasants at that time, these ideas about going on to a heaven or a nirvana-like state after dying, it probably would have had quite a lot of appeal at that time because their material conditions were very stark, whereas the analysis you're giving us, Heather, is more, I think, in a modern setting.
Well, my thinking, my comparison is so everybody can say, well, look, you know, I'm not going to jump up and down and scream and shout because I don't have what the next person's got. But hey, what have I got and what can I make of that and how can I take that forward,
mm.
and be progressive? So be positive,
mm.
to be positive,
mm.
but not to crave the rewards of being without in this lifetime, because well, being shamanic, I know that every stage of life you're at is a learning curve. It's all a learning curve, and then you can go forward and do with it what you can and what you would like. You have many options when you know it's a learning curve. What I wanted to say was, if hopefully we have time in this recording, that one thing I found was very important were from the teachings of Carlos Castaneda, who was one of the original teachers of shamanism in the Western world. The teaching was that we in the Western world forget to live every day as if it's our last.
That's the
and that's what I was on about earlier, about the fact that we fear death so much and we try to preserve our life so much that we don't actually live life anymore.
That's it, exactly. And this is his teachings: once you start to accept death as absolute, instead of I'll worry about it someday and it's a long way from me, it can be tomorrow, it can be immediately. So if you take on that concept without terror and without fear and without negative, you say to yourself, okay, what can I do with my life today? What can I do with my surroundings, my environment, with people around me? What can I do? If it's my last, how differently would I think and how would I go forward? And when you stop and consider that within your life, it starts to change almost everything. There's a lot of teachers that we're having, a lot of books, a lot of lectures, a lot of teachers that we have now in the Western world that are teaching positive thinking, shall we say. But at the end of the day, that's what they're teaching. They're teaching, just think how different your world can evolve if you thought that in case tomorrow's my last, what am I going to do that today? Although I'd hate to encourage anybody to go, well, sod it, I'm actually breaking the bank, breaking into the bank and stealing the bank's money.
Wouldn't be much money in the bank. That's why people rob post offices. But again, that's another issue.
And we'll talk more about that next week.
Yeah. I think we'll move things on a bit now.
Okay. So I just quickly wanted to bring in a kind of like a scientific view on the whole death experience, just to give a different perspective per se. So currently the way that science views the whole kind of like death experience with the tunnel vision, everything blacking out and you see like the white light at the end of the tunnel, apparently they say that's just blood draining away from the eyes and actually just everything blacking out and you only see what almost looks like the tunnel, and that's why you get the light at the end of the tunnel effect. And apparently they say like the euphoria effects that you get when you're dying are pretty much related to the release of all the chemicals in the brain, the feel good chemicals,
like dopamine,
and also along with DMT at the death experience. So I have to admit, from the scientific angle, it's rather boring and bland in that sense. But I was just wondering, Heather, what would your opinions be on that?
This is very, very well said and theorised by those who have never had a near-death experience. But it's true.
That is true. Everyone who writes these things kind of like sits at a desk, no fear of death because, you know,
Or in the laboratories. But this is theorised by people who have never experienced it. And I will say to you, for instance, because I know I've had similar experience, that if you've never seen somebody astral walking, or if you've never been sidled up to by somebody who's just passed over, a spirit of somebody who's just passed over, and they've sidled up to you and they start merging with you, and that you can feel it and you know it and they're talking to you, if you've never had that experience, you would believe this theory. But if you've had that experience, you can no longer fully go on that theory because you realize there is more.
Yeah.
Which is where I come from, and I don't expect everybody else to be there with me.
I was going to say, I just had a toe dipped into the experience when I was about 7. with like I said about the seeing the ghostly apparitions of my parents. So I definitely believe there is more, yes. And that's why I've always travelled along this journey.
Yes.
I mean, from my perspective, thinking about death and trying to bring some sense of comfort, I think of it in a very zoomed out metaphysical sense, and this idea that on the one hand, you know, we're just like pebbles on the beach, we're just, you know, like grains of rice, you know, but at the same time we are part of this amazing universe. So this again, it's this paradox that on the one hand we're this insignificant thing, but on the other hand we're part of the whole, we're part of the whole magnificence of creation. And I think when death happens, we're brought this understanding, or this awareness is brought to our attention, because we, as we said before, the stark ending of death and how, you know, it just hits you. It does, you know, for family around and friends, I think they can be drawn to this more philosophical kind of understanding, if you know what I'm talking about.
Don't you think that every time there is a loss, and it can be a pet as well, that is on the same level, I feel, as a human being, loss within the family.
Mm-hmm.
I believe if it doesn't harm anybody, it's what brings comfort is incredibly important. And to be able to nurture that as other human beings around is really important.
Because, again, as Mike said earlier, and we were discussing, we all look for ways to get some comfort, you know, after a loved one's died, because life does just carry on. And, you know, person's died, but all the normal processes that are going on in nature, they all happen. The day-to-day cultural things, they all happen. But that person's not there. So I think we do look for things to give us comfort.
Did you ever find it bizarre when you live through that experience of somebody close to you passing over or dying, whatever we want to call it, suddenly look around and realise how bizarre it is that everything's still happening the same as it did before?
Perfect. You almost want to walk up to people and say, don't you realise you could die in any moment? We're back to, you know, what we're talking about. Don't you realise death is real?
Death is real.
Death is real.
Oh, that is quite profound. Mm. Death is real. Mm. Yes, sir. And I always wanted in that situation to walk up to people and say, look, you have to stop, because the world stop at the moment. World cease to exist at the moment. It's just in stop. And I couldn't believe that people still were rushing off to their jobs. No, you need to stop. Everybody needs to take a day off. It's as if I felt everybody had to join in.
Mm.
Otherwise, it was a little bizarre. That everything continued, while this person who was so important had ceased to continue.
Mm.
Yeah, I know what you're saying there. You just want the whole world to stop, nothing to happen, and you just need time to reflect and deal with the situation, don't you?
To slow down.
You do need time, and you do need to slow down, I think. Mm. Yeah, you do. It's not always possible within the situation.
No, or the culture we live in.
Or the culture that we live in, but you need time to adjust to the change and the magnitude of somebody who was firing off on all pistons within your environment and within your life and having an effect on you. Suddenly there's a huge gap. It's not there. And I'm not sure how you fellas have experienced it, but for me it was, is he or she okay wherever they are?
Yeah.
And for me that was the most upsetting, dramatically upsetting. For me it was, oh my God, is he okay? Oh my God, is she okay?
Mm.
Wherever they are they okay? Are they lonely? Are they frightened? Are they safe? And I'm sure that goes through the minds of a lot of people that are grieving.
Mm.
I think I'll definitely agree with you on that one.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Now, I do want to slightly cover the subject of near-death experiences.
Okay.
because within the whole death thing, yes, a lot of people do pass over in that sense, but some people have the experience of dying and then come back.
And get to tell us.
So I was wondering, since you've got more authority in that sense, what's that all about?
I think my authority comes from having died and come back again, but I see it as reincarnation.
How grandiose.
Well, I'm slight diversion. I'm going to say I remember a young lad many years ago telling his mother after he'd recovered from having a tragic experience and in a deep coma, in hospital, and in those early days, the doctors didn't understand that if somebody's in a deep coma, that they could actually hear what was going on around them. Mm. They didn't know. So right beside the bed, the doctor said to the mother, "I'm really sorry, but we are going to lose him. He is going to die." So it was a young lad, a strapping young lad, but he said, he's in deep coma and we can't bring him back, and we think he's going to die. Mm. And that maybe if you began to get used to that, it would help you, type of thing. Quite a long time later, the young lad, having recovered fully, said to his mum one day, when she said, "Well, you were supposed to die and it's a miracle that," and he said, "It's not a miracle, mum." And she said, "Well, what do you mean it's not a miracle?" He said, "When I was in the hospital, the doctor told you that I was going to die." Mm. And she said, "Well, how did you know that?" He said, "Because I heard." She said, "But you were in a deep coma." He said, "Yes, but I still heard." "And how did you?" "I don't know how." But he said, "I knew instinctively at that moment in time that I actually had a choice. I could see that I was slipping deeper and deeper away from the surroundings, the physical reality. Mm-hmm. It was very fuzzy. There was a fuzziness that was
membrane,
like a membrane mm. was keeping me away. And I realised that I had a choice of two directions, either to keep slipping and allow this, or fight back and fight forward." Mm. He said, "And I thought about it quite calmly. I wasn't frightened. Everything seemed okay, but I knew I had a choice. And I realised that if I fought back, I could have some time as myself upon this planet." Mm. And I decided I wanted to, so I fought back. But if I hadn't have heard the doctor say that to you, I wouldn't have known that choice, and then I would have slipped away. Mm. So that's an interesting,
fascinating story.
Yeah, and that was a long time ago, so it's possible to speak about it now. Mm. But that did happen. Mm.
So would you say in that context that most people that have these sort of experiences have a choice in that respect, and they choose to come back?
Do they choose to come back? The cases that I've heard about, I should say, generally, I believe that so for some people, I think sometimes it's a mistake. I don't think they're meant to have a near-death experience. So I think it's a bit of a mistake, but I believe that they're likely still, if you don't mind me saying this part of my understanding of from what I believe because of where my background.
Well, that's why we invited you on.
Please do tell.
I think you're still tightly joined by the umbilical cord. The umbilical cord that holds you, the spirit, I would call it, to the physicality, to the meridian system,
yeah,
to the chakra system, therefore, and your aura, shall we call,
yeah,
the whole thing, and your physicality. You have a strong cord that's connecting you, and that, therefore, that breaks at the time of death. At the time of death, it's understood from this, if you're okay me explaining this,
yeah, sure,
then there's some great teachings on how this process works now at the point of passing through. But it's understood you go through a donut. And I think, Mike, you would understand what I mean by the
What's
donut.
What's the technical name for the shape of the donut, Mike?
Technical name is called the torus.
Good,
the
thank
torus
you.
Donut, exactly. That actually, right in the centre, it's the hole that you go through is smaller than a hair. It's actually smaller than a hair, and you have to pass through it to leave.
Mm.
So it's like the reverse of birthing, and it's the reverse of and it's understood that you're birthing through to the next space, and there should be midwives waiting for you in the spirit world to help you through.
Thank you, Heather. That's a great description of the death and beyond. I mean, that's a really
There is midwives, and there's wonderful teaching now we have in this country, particularly in Dorset. There's a wonderful teaching that teaches you how this process works, and it's very much a shamanic teaching as well, that you pass through. And so the people on this side should be helping the person through, because it is a difficult process sometimes, and then there are people, spirits, on midwives on the other side that are helping people through.
I mean, of course, that's a wonderful approach, because as we all know, what commonly happens in hospitals is a person normally will be elderly. You know, their vitals are packing up, death is imminent, and or maybe not imminent, they're kept on, you know, kept going on through the administration of heavy dose medication. There's no sense of guiding the person through this process.
They're normally left by themselves.
They're just left by themselves, they're frightened, they might be angry, and it's really distressing, whereas what you're describing is a very innovative and evolved approach to death.
But there are the hospices that we have now. I mean, they're the places, the medical places that are now specialising in helping the process through in different ways.
Because you need specialist trained staff to do this, don't you?
Yes, possibly. I'm not sure about that detail, I have to say, but I think so. But they are very supportive with any religion, any tradition that family need to help their loved one to go through.
Mm.
Whatever they need, they're very supportive of it and they're very understanding of it. And I believe, you know, quite a few medical people who deal with the passing of life go to have this more advanced training that involves, therefore, the more esoteric understanding that I've been explaining to you. So we have progression. There is a lot of progression going on. We, you know, obviously we're all thrilled to know that is happening. So a lot of people, particularly in hospices, and then you would get the community team. They would be very supportive and helpful of people dying at home, to help them, to help the person leaving the body to go through to the next stage in the most beautiful way and the most helpful way. So we've come a long way as a society.
I think that's a really good way to draw things to an end. A lovely explanation. Thank you.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So just to round up, I would say, even if you don't necessarily believe in what we currently believe, as long as you believe in something that lets you sleep at night, then that's okay. So on that note, I will say goodbye from me.
Goodbye, everyone.
Yes, bye, everybody.
Goodbye.